Well, sorry. Apparently, that was really aggressive. I'm sorry, Representative Joy. I think I shocked a couple of people there. Woo! All right, everybody's awake. Welcome, everyone, to. welcome to the Tax Committee for February 28th, 2023. I'm calling the meeting to order. We have a quorum present. First item of business is to approve the minutes for February 21st. Vice Chair Norris, do you have a motion?
Chair Gomez, I'll move the minutes from the February 21st meeting.
Excellent. Is there any discussion to the motion? Not seeing any, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, please say no. All right, motion carries. The minutes for the 21st of February, 2023 are adopted. So we have one bill up on the calendar for the day, House File 1938, and I'm going to move that it be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. This is the governor's bill, and I'm going to pass it over to Vice Chair Norris and just go up to the table. Bring all my many things with me here. We should have just had you start the meeting.
This is like so weird and awkward.
I know, it's very cool.
He could have never hit that like she
did.
All right. Chair Gomez, your bill has been moved. You have an author's amendment, the A23-0027 amendment.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the amendment also.
All right. The amendment has been moved. Any discussion on the A? Would you like to describe the amendment?
If you don't mind, if I just turn it over to the Commissioner of Revenue to describe the author's amendment quick. Thank you, Mr.
Absolutely. Commissioner Marquardt, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And for the record, my name is Paul Marquardt, the Commissioner of the Department of Revenue. And the amendment that is brought up here is mainly technical, but it covers mainly three parts of the bill. The first part has to do with pass-through entities, just a clarification. Another part says that it would consistently refer to the taxable Social Security benefits throughout that part of the bill. And the remainder, four or five, parts of this amendment deals with the advanced tax credit, dealing with those who would not qualify, dealing with spouses not full-time residents, and actually some timetable things. So that is the amendment, mainly technical in nature.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Marquardt. Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to, you know, because this was prescribed as a technical amendment, on line, is it A23-0027 amendment? Is that the amendment we're speaking to?
Yes.
On line 1.9, page 28, line 15, delete, were Minnesota residents only. Does that vastly increase the folks that are eligible for these things, or doesn't seem very technical? It seems quite potentially controversial.
Commissioner Marquardt.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, just a second. I'll get right back to Representative. I'd like to find the language first.
Certainly.
And Representative Swedzinski, what line was that? That was
1.9. Mr. Commissioner. Oh, yeah.
Commissioner Marquardt, if you'd like House Research to address it as well, that's an option.
Yes.
All right. All right, we'll go to House Research. Mr. Williams.
Chair Norris, Representative Swedzinski, when looking at the instructions on 1.9 and 1.10 and 11 of the author's amendment, it looks like it's deleting a phrase that says, where one or both individuals were Minnesota residents for only part of 2023, and inserting instead are not Minnesota residents for all of 2023. So I think it's just using a sort of different nomenclature to describe part year residents.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner.
Any other discussion, members, on the A23 amendment? All right. At this point, we will take a vote on the A23-0027 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The motion passes. The A23-0027 amendment is adopted. Chair Gomez, would you like to discuss your bill as amended?
Yeah, thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and my gratitude to the Department of Revenue for being here and the governor for bringing forward this bill. You know, I think the thing that really sticks out to me about the governor's tax proposal this year is that it aligns with what he's told us his priorities will be in this budget. What he said is that he wants to help out families and children who are struggling, especially those folks who are most impacted by some of the inequalities that we see in our economy. And so that's what shines through this budget. And, you know, I just, you know, the commissioner's going to walk us through the different parts. I think there's, I'm going to borrow a phrase about maybe the commissioner's tax bills that he's brought forward in a different role, but there's something to love for everybody in this bill. There might be some parts that some of us have problems with, but, you know, look forward to working with everybody to kind of bring all of the elements together as we build our omnibus tax bill. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Next, we will transition to Commissioner Marquardt walking us through the bill. Members, we've got 2 days held for this bill, and we've got a lot of public testimony. The commissioner's going to do a walkthrough. So if you've got any, like, quick clarifying questions for the commissioner as he's going through the walkthrough now, those would be appropriate, but we'll try to hold the substantive questions until we get to the member discussion portion, which, depending on the length of testimony, will either be later today or possibly at tomorrow's hearing. So with that, we'll go to Commissioner Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. First of all, thank you for hearing the bill. Thank you to the author, Chair Gomez, for carrying the bill. It's an honor to be here. Yesterday, we heard the February forecast come out, and what we're hearing is that Minnesotans are continuing to drive this economy. And as a result, we have a historic $17.5 billion surplus. And Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, in their one Minnesota budget, invest those dollars back into Minnesotans and to making Minnesota even a better state. And I have to say, you know, I've been around here over a couple decades, and I have never seen a budget with such clarity and such focus as the one that Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan has proposed. And it's a simple message that they have, but a very powerful one, and that is to make Minnesota the best state in the country for kids. And that's exactly what this bill does. So I'm enthused, I'm honored to present this bill, because the tax portions of the budget and the budget, what I see is really going to make a difference in people's lives. It's really going to move the needle. And in this budget and in this tax bill, the governor and lieutenant governor go all out for kids and families. And, you know, when you look at the bill, as I'm going to go through this, not only is it the largest tax cut in the history of the state, about $5.8 billion of tax cuts just this biennium, but 85% of the ongoing tax cuts, roughly about $1.7, $1.8 billion, goes directly to kids and families. That's the commitment. And we know, as I'm going to mention further, is that this will lower child poverty rates by at least 25%. And when you can do things like that, you improve educational attainment, you improve your workforce, you make for a stronger economy, you lower incarceration rates, reduce disparities that you have concerning early education and employment. It benefits the entire community and the entire state. So with that, in addition to what you're going to hear directly, a child tax credit and a child dependent care credit, you also have about $4 billion going directly back to Minnesotans in the form of an advanced credit rebate. And when you total everything up, the $5.8, $5.9 billion of tax cuts in this biennium, that's about one-third. About one-third of the total surplus is going directly back to Minnesotans, back in their pockets, back in the families' pockets, back in the senior citizens' pockets. That will benefit the state in so many ways. So with that, Mr. Chair, if I could go through the bill. And
Commissioner Markwart, just before you proceed, Representative Swedzinski, did you have a quick clarifying question?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to the commissioner, you said in your statements that you had that this bill cut taxes by $5.8 billion, or that number roughly.
Yes.
Is that number a calculation of folks that actually people that are early actually currently have a tax liability and you're cutting those taxes, or is it folks that you're just taking money from one taxpayer and give it to another? Like, is that the number of actual tax cuts? So like if that they'll be paid people spending $5.8 billion less in taxes, or is it that you're taking from one taxpayer and giving it to another taxpayer?
Commissioner Mark,
what's the number?
Mr. Chair, no, thank you, Representative Swedzinski. So here's the M1 booklet right here. And so what you're seeing is $3.9 billion in an advanced tax credit that will go out in the first biennium. Then you have about $1.12 billion that will go to a child tax credit. And then another $540 million the first biennium on a child independent care credit. And then you have some other. And I suppose that equals what, $5.6 billion. So this is tax cuts, tax benefits, ever how you would want to do that. But you know, when you look at your M1, you know, you go to number 15, line 15, it says tax before credits. And then you add up your credits, which are further tax cuts. And so I don't know how you would classify it exactly, but it's tax cuts and tax benefits of $5.5 billion, which would be the largest in state history.
Representative Swedzinski, a quick follow-up?
Yeah, just quick follow-up. Thank you. And I would just reiterate, you know, I think it's important to differentiate the two. A tax benefit is not a tax cut. If you actually owe taxes, like Social Security or other taxes, and you don't have to pay those taxes with this bill, that's a tax cut, which I think you, with your own numbers, it's going to be exceptionally lacking. But if it's just a tax benefit, which is essentially taking from one taxpayer who actually owes money to the state, and instead of giving that money back to them to invest in their business and or do any of those things, which would be a cut because they have to pay less now, they're simply taking that money and giving it to someone else. That's not a tax. That's a tax benefit. I think words matter. Mr. Commissioner, and I understand what Governor would like to perceive this bill to be, but this bill is not a tax cut. This is a tax shift, if anything. It appears that way.
So, Commissioner Markwart.
Mr. Chair, what I'm going to say and put it in a different way is that Minnesotans around this state are going to have $5.5 billion more back in their back pocket than they would without this bill. And to me, that is a huge tax cut.
All right.
And that's the governor's intent.
Thank you, Commissioner Markwart. Please proceed with walking us through the bill.
So the first part, and I apologize, I'm not going to go section by section, but more kind of in theme areas, if you will. And as the Madam Chair mentioned, the major goal of Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan is to focus on kids and families. And a huge part, like 85% of the ongoing cuts, will go in that regard. So let's start with the child tax credit is the first one. So this would provide a $1,000 per child under 18 tax credit up to three children, so up to a maximum of $3,000 credit. For married joint filings, the phase out would begin at $50,000. And so for one child, that phase out at $60,000, ultimately for two children, $70,000, and for three children, $80,000. And what we know and why, and this is about $1.1 billion in tax cuts to families with children. And we know that conservatively, this will reduce child poverty in Minnesota by at least 25%. We know that because when the federal government did a child tax credit in 2021, very close to that, the child poverty rate went down by 46%. And these numbers are very close. The Institute of Tax and Economic Policy says with these numbers and their analysis, it will reduce child poverty by 25%. And that's just this portion. There are the child dependent care and other things that would probably reduce it more, but we know it's at least 25%. And studies have shown that when you can reduce child poverty, you are going to increase educational attainment. You have more people going to college, you have a stronger workforce, and you have a better economy. It also reduces incarceration rates, and as I mentioned before, reduces disparities, social economic disparities when it comes to early education and employment. So it really benefits and lifts the communities. About 10 states have a child tax credit right now. And I think Vermont has one that would be $1,000, so we would be matching the highest of the 10 that have that. Next major area dealing with kids and family is expanding the child dependent care credit. By the way, getting back to the kind of numbers, about 364,000 filers, families would see an average benefit on the child tax credit of about $1,500 cut. On the child care and dependent credits, right now, the maximum you can get per child on a credit is about $1,050, and the phase-out is at $59,000. This, the governor's proposal greatly expands that, where it would raise the income threshold to $200,000, married joint filers, before you would start phase that out. And it also raises that $1,050 to a $1,500 credit. But the great start of this credit is named for that. So if you have children from 0 to 4 years of age, you can receive a credit up to $4,000 per child from 0 to 4. If you have 2 children, that credit is $8,000, and for 3 or more, it's $10,500. About 58,000 families would benefit from that expansion. And we know from the Women's Bureau and the United States Department of Labor that parents nationwide spend about 13% of their income on child care. And the optimum number would be about 7%. And you know, if you're in poverty, you're paying about 30%. So this would go a long ways in helping our communities and helping these families. And the same study by the Women's Bureau said that if you can have affordable, high-quality child care to put more parents to work, again, lowers child poverty, decreases inequities that we have. So very beneficial to that regard. The third one that deals specifically, again, with families is the K through 12 education credit. Three main changes, and I know Representative Norris is working very hard on this issue also. The governor's proposal makes three changes. It increases the phase out to 59,000. It indexes all the numbers there, and also moves from household income to federal adjusted gross income. In about close to 30,000 families, we'll see about a $300 credit for that. So before I move any further on, I just want to talk about the benefits that the governor's and lieutenant governor's proposal has for families. And you also should have a handout that kind of lists some scenarios on the tax cuts and tax benefits that folks would have. But let me put things in perspective of what this means for families, what the Governor Walz's proposal has. Is that, first of all, with the standard deduction of $27,650 for married joint filers and a dependent exemption of $4,800, if you have a family of four, the first $37,250 of your income is you pay no taxes, which if you take away the tax, the states that don't have an income tax, that is the highest zero bracket of any state. Of any state. I think Maine might tie us with that. But we actually, families are probably doing better than most states that don't have an income tax because of the refunds that they're going to see based on the child tax credit and the dependent care credit. So let me give you an example. If you've got a single parent with two children and one is under the age of five, you will not pay any income tax or you'll receive a refund on any income $100,000 or less. If you have a family of four, and let's say you have one child from zero to four and you get the big benefit there and then another child over that, the first $127,000 of income either would be tax-free or if you're under that, you'd receive a refund. And if you're a family of four and you have two children under the age of five, the first $164,000 of that income you would pay no taxes on or you would receive a refund if it's less than that. And so one of the big goals for Governor Walz is addressing the workforce shortage. And we know when it comes to migration studies that about three quarters of the migration loss on the average, according to demographer studies and house research studies and so forth, is really younger people, 18 to 24. And if we can retain families and attract new families to the state of Minnesota, it's going to help the workforce shortage. I mean, this is a game changer for families when you put all of this together. And quite frankly, in looking at the statistics here, Minnesota could become one of the most tax-friendly states for families with this Governor Walz, Lieutenant Governor Flanagan's proposal. And so these are huge components of the plan. The fourth kind of big area of the governor's plan is the one-time advanced refundable tax credit. This would be a one-time payment, $1,000 for single, $2,000 for married joint filers, and then on top of that, $200 for each dependent. So the maximum credit, up to three kids, so the maximum credit could be $2,600 for a family. That would be one time, that would that's a cost of about $3.9 billion. It would get out to about 2.6 million filers, an average of about $1,500 of a tax credit. The governor has always talked about how he has wanted to help ease the pain of inflation. This does that. And that's a great use for one-time funding, is to match one-time funding with the one-time inflation where it's really high. And so this would help pay for rent, help pay for childcare, groceries, school expenses. It would be very, very important. If this was to pass in May, those first wave of checks could go out early fall if that did occur. I think, and this would be based pretty much on 2021 income tax returns for like the first wave that would go out. All right, if we could move on, other individual income tax cuts in the bill. So the Social Security benefit subtraction, this was first added in 2017. It was expanded in 2019. And basically what the subtraction does is once you go through somewhat the complicated formula of figuring out what portion of your taxes are taxable, this subtraction then takes off from that. And so let's say it wound up at $13,000, whatever that might be. This subtraction then subtracts off, and if it, this now goes to a benefit of $10,000, now the taxable portion would be $3,000. So it's raising on married joint filers that subtraction from, which is indexed every year. So I think it's up to about $5,800 now. That would go up to $10,000 for a married joint filer. And so that would impact about 377,000 seniors, an average tax cut of about $278. And it also increases the phase-out. So the phase-out used to be at $88,000 for married joint filers. That would go up to about $120,000. And with the phase-out, you would see at least a partial benefit on this proposal up to about $170,000 of income. So basically, you are getting probably about 90% of the seniors now who receive a Social Security benefit would be paying no taxes at all, or at least see some sort of a tax cut under Minnesota law if this was to pass. In my calculations, using the House research model that Mr. Williams has put together, I kind of plugged in some of these numbers, and what I come up to is that if you are making about $21,000 a piece as a Social Security benefit, and I think the couple years ago was $19,000, but even last year it went up 8.7% Social Security. So let's say it's $21,000. For a couple, that would be $42,000. With this $10,000 subtraction, you could make about $69,000 without paying any taxes on Social Security, married joint filer. So that means you could earn about $27,000 of other income besides the $42,000 you're getting on Social Security before you'd have to pay anything on Social Security benefits. And on for a single senior filer, person with Social Security benefits, that number is about $37,000. So $21,000 Social Security, you could have about $16,000 of outside income. So that's kind of looking at that model on how that would play out. So it's giving you kind of a rough number of where we're at on where you could go as far as not paying taxes on Social Security. Next. So we have some other areas here. So we have a working family credit expansion, which now includes those with individual tax information numbers would now be included. Currently, if you are an I-10 filer, and that was required by the federal government in 1996, saying regardless of your status, you need to pay taxes, and so this is a way to do that. But right now, the child dependent care, the renter's refund, and the K-12 education credit, I-10 filers currently qualify. This would expand that to working family credit. We also, the governor modifies the credit for military service in the combat zone. So right now, you have to wait to when you file. Now you'd be able to do that earlier in the year. And the Department of Revenue under this proposal would eliminate the $50 fee required when they are doing a payment plan. So if there is a filer right now that needs to change their payment plan and the Department of Revenue is working with that person, every time they change something, there's a $50 fee. That is being eliminated. And I was surprised to see, I mean, that's $1.5 million a year. So there's a lot of people doing these agreements, and this is going to, you know, help that filer do that and make work it through without an extra administrative expense. Assisting local and tribal governments, we have governor and lieutenant governor proposes an increase of $30 million to local government aid, which would take local government aid to the highest level it has ever seen, take it to about $594 million. Back in 2003, It was certified at $587 million, and then that's the year it was cut $150 million. So they never received the $587, but that was the highest ever certified. So this would take it to $594 million, and also $30 million increase for county program aid. And we know how important that is, and I see some mayors around the table and so forth that I know the local government aid is very valuable. So sales tax exemption for construction materials, that is one time. So this would be for cities and counties, school districts, townships, nonprofits. And it's from any construction project, so it goes back retroactively to anything after June 30th of 2021 up until January 1st of 2025. And so the idea is there's been, you know, we're in an inflation right now, and construction costs are high. This helps offset those construction costs during this period of time. And that's, I think, about $250 million of one-time funding over these next 2 years. Further, the public safety aid, that is another big priority for Governor Walz, is public safety. This would send out $300 million to cities and counties and our 11 tribal governments. And the way it would work is 70% or $210 million would go out to cities that have a police department. There are 303 of those cities, and the average per capita would be about $51 per capita for those cities. And then for counties and the 11 federally recognized tribes, it would be the population outside of the police department. Population, those cities. It'd be the population outside, and then that's about $53 per capita, and that would be $90 million. And that goes to police departments, fire departments, EMSs, ambulance services, total local control on how cities and counties, tribal governments want to use those dollars. It could be for, you know, it's one time, so it could be for equipment, could be for recruitment bonuses, could deal with mental health. All sorts of things that the government, local governments, would want to use that for. There's also $44 million in Tribal Nation Homelessness Aid, which would be $4 million that would go out to each of the 11 tribal governments to deal with homelessness prevention. And another one you might have heard is the Soil and Water Conservation District. There is a $12 million per year permanent funding for soil and water conservation districts. It's something they've been working for a number of years. Property tax modifications. We certainly, some of the areas we already covered deal with property taxes, either directly or indirectly. But increase access to senior citizen property tax deferral. This is a program that is not used very much. And I know legislators have worked on this for years and trying to ramp this program up. So this is trying to expand it and make it more attractive to sign up for. The School Bond Agricultural Tax Credit, this also first started in 2017 when it was set at 40%. And what is this, also been called the Ag to School Credit? It is where on school bonding debts on school building projects and bonds, right in 2017, this is a credit that covers that portion of property taxes on ag land. Initially, was 2017 was 40%. In the 2019 tax bill, it was expanded to a 70% credit, which actually went into effect this property tax year. This would expand that to 80%, starting with property tax payable in 2025. Would raise that to 80%. And then another provision, we're expanding I-10 tax filers for homestead classification. The big one here is that now I-10 filers would be able to qualify for the homestead credit state refund or the property tax refund. Business relief and some federal changes. A big thank you for passing that conformity bill. I mean, it shows that when you get rid of that old tax chair, how quickly you can move on. And so the governor, Lieutenant Governor, greatly appreciated that very, very much to get that through. So thank this committee for doing that. There are a few additional conformity items that are here. One is conforming to the deduction for excess business losses. And that does raise some revenues, and that was a part that had been taken out earlier but now is being put in. And so it is current law right now that a marriage joint filer cannot write off more than $500,000 of their business losses. That was part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that was passed in 2017. And that went till 2025. Well, what the Fed said is we're not going to cut that off in 2025. We're going to keep that limitation on excess business losses up through at least 28. And so we're conforming to the Fed's on this one, actually continuing existing state law. So it's not, we're adding it on, but it's continuing what is actually current state law and federal law for that matter. And then another change had to do with a non-resident percentage part that just kind of cleaned things up. We can move to the next one. We've got a couple new business additions. After a one-year absence, the historic tax credit is back, reinstated. And it actually goes retro back to July 1st of 2022. So that's when it ceased, but we will pick that. The governor will pick that back up, and the credit expires in 2031. There's a sunset. And then the Angel Investment Tax Credit extends the credit effective for tax years 2023 through 2030, and that's $10 million a year. So next slide is the capital gains and dividend income. There is an increase on taxes levied on capital gains and qualified dividends. So it is any capital gains or qualified dividend over $500,000 would see an increase of 1.5%, and any capital gains and qualified dividend over $1 million would be taxed as an additional 4%. This has been a priority for Governor Walz. He has always thought this was a huge tax fairness issue. And while on the state side, there's no difference there between, there's no preferential rates between capital gains and the ordinary rate. But on the federal side, there is a huge difference. In fact, an ordinary rate where you might be paying 37%, you would be paying probably 20% or 23.8% if you count the net investment income, 3.8% that's added on. So there's quite a difference. And so the idea is, why should income be treated differently? So why should a certain income be at a preferential lower rate than the income earned by wages by plumbers or police officers or nurses or teachers? Why should there be that difference? And that's a big reason why Governor Walz has this included. And even if you include, if you combine the state and federal rates, even with this proposal, if you combine state and federal rates, you still would be paying 36% less in taxes than if it was all by ordinary rates, because you still have that huge benefit on the federal side.
Representative Swedzinski, did you have a quick clarifying question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just answer that question. You asked the question, why would we have, from a dividend standpoint and an investment standpoint, is that to actually encourage investment. No, that's why historically Minnesotans have believed that, whether it's a dividend or from a
a business standpoint, why we have capital gains in a different taxation is because Minnesotans historically have understood the need for investment in Minnesota and the understanding that, you know, taking income and investing it and creating jobs, giving people opportunities is important. And, you know, I think one of the biggest fears we have, Commissioner, is that, you know, this will encourage disinvestment from Minnesota. This will encourage folks to not live here, stay here, retire here. You know, it's interesting. I was just kind of looking over. I just have a question, if that's okay. Will this increase the death tax in Minnesota? So if you die in Minnesota, will you be taxed? Will your relatives be taxed more when you die because of this tax increase?
Commissioner Marquardt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Swazinski. So if you pass it on to a son or a daughter, then you get the step-up basis. So let's say you sell 100 acres for, well, let's say $6 million, and you sell it for $7 million or whatever. The new basis is now the $7 million for if it's passed on. So there wouldn't be a difference there. I suppose if it is not to, you know, inherited down or passed down, then if it would be over $500,000 or over $1 million, yes, then I believe that would apply.
So this bill,
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you. So this bill potentially, you know, makes it tough, more difficult, or less interesting to keep, you know, your business or your trust or any of those entities within the state of Minnesota unless you're locked here. So it could potentially cost more, you know, as a farmer, depending on how much you value. Obviously, inflation is the Biden inflation we're dealing with right now is increasing the cost of all the things that we have. And so if your inflationary increase on your land hits a certain point, and your family's going to potentially have to pay more if grandma or grandpa pass away because of this bill.
Commissioner Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Brzezinski. So, like on the estate tax, especially with what the federal government does, very few people are going to pay an estate tax anymore, because I think it, for married joint filers, it's up to like $22 million. Or so. I mean, it's just, and in Minnesota, it's, what, $3 million, I believe, and in farmland, it's $5 million. So, you know, we're talking about the wealthiest of the wealthy in a lot of respects here. And so will they pay a little bit more? Yes. But one of the reasons the governor has been supportive of this is that this isn't an idea to raise revenue, even though it does. That's not the, I mean, this is a small portion of a big budget if you want to talk about the total numbers. But it's the ability to do other things to give everyone on all income levels a fair shot for all Minnesotans. And really, that's what it's going to do. So are some going to have to pay more? Are the, you know, people with over $1 million, you know, $500,000 capital gain or $1 million capital gain going to have to pay more? Yes. But it helps level the playing field for everyone. It really allows everyone to be able to benefit in our economy.
Thank you, Commissioner Marquardt. And please proceed with the rest of your testimony.
I think we're going to finish with cannabis. So the very last part here is identifying edible cannabinoids, which was something that occurred at the very end of session last year. And so this adds edible cannabinoids to a list of taxable items for sale. So, members, that is the overview of the bill. And I just kind of want to conclude that the governor and lieutenant governor, their One Minnesota budget recognizes the hard work that our families, our seniors, our businesses are putting in to provide this surplus that we have. And the governor wants to get money back in the pockets of folks. And one third of the budget goes back directly in the form of these tax cuts to individuals and families and senior citizens. And the challenge with this budget surplus is are we going to be able to do the right thing? Are we going to be able to focus on a few things? And the governor focuses on kids and families. And if we can do this right, we can really make a difference in people's lives. We can move the needle. We can make transformational changes. And so that is what the governor and lieutenant governor's tax bill done. It's part of a bigger One Minnesota budget, but it is a very powerful statement, a very powerful document. And it's like the governor says, this is not just a fiscal document, it's a moral document. And this will help move the state forward, make our economy stronger into the future. So, members, Madam Chair, thank you so much for allowing me to present the governor and lieutenant governor's tax bill today.
Thank you, Commissioner Marquardt. Members, Commissioner Marquardt will be back tomorrow, so there will be plenty of time for additional substantive questions at that time. In the interest of time, we want to get to public testimony. Representative Kozik, before we do, did you have a quick technical question, or is it something more substantive that we should wait for member discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, it's relative to the overall presentation of the bill, so it is substantive.
Representative Kozik, can we wait until the member discussion for that, please?
Well, I think it might be relative to the testimony that we might hear and set the table here.
Representative Kozik, we're going to limit this to quick technical clarifying questions. So.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Commissioner and to the author, you know, Bill, this is the largest tax cut in history, but we also have the largest surplus or overcollection of taxes in our forecast of $7.5 billion, closer to 20 if we include the inflation in there. But does this bill also include the sales tax increase included in the metro area and the motor vehicle sales tax increase on all Minnesotans that purchase a vehicle? Is that included in your $5.8 billion tax cut that you're calling?
Commissioner Marquardt.
Or is that separate?
Yeah, and Representative Kosnick, it does not, just like it does not also include the huge increases to education and child care funding and so forth.
Thank you, Commissioner Marquardt.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the time. You know, just since it sounds like you're leaving here, you know,
Representative Kosnick, he'll be back.
Just real quick, you know, Minnesotans held up their wallet and they were take $17.5 billion extra was taken out of their wallet, and you're only putting $5.8 back.
Chair Gomez.
So I think thank you.
We need to understand.
Representative Kosnick, you are out of order.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we have a lot of people from the community here who want to speak on this bill, and so we're going to go to that. But I appreciate, you know, we're holding conversation among members, and that was conversation among members. And the commissioner is not leaving. He's going to come back. So we're going to have a chance to go into all of that. But while we have members of the public here, if we could please just be respectful of their time and move on to that portion as we outlined at the very beginning of this hearing that we were going to do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I appreciate that. Very good. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Thank you, Commissioner Marquardt. We appreciate your time, and we're looking forward to seeing you again tomorrow. With that, members, we're going to move on to public testimony. And first up, we have Mr. Brad Leto from the AFL-CIO. If you could please limit your testimony to 2 minutes per testifier. We have about 20 people we're going to try to get through. We may not get through all of it today, but it'll be important to limit your testimony to 2 minutes. And maybe in the interest of time, we'll have Mr. Cryon move to a position where he's on deck and ready to go after Mr. Leto. So, Mr. Leto, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Norris, Chair Gomez, and members of the House Tax Committee. My name is Brad Leto. I'm a Secretary Treasurer of the Minnesota AFL-CIO Federation of more than 1,000 local unions representing more than 300,000 working Minnesotans. I could talk at length about the bill, all of the good things, but I will limit my testimony today to the comments on Article 1, Section 6 of Social Security benefit subtraction provisions. The Social Security provisions in this bill are a real relief to, and I had over hundreds of thousands, and I've seen in the presentation it was 377,000 seniors in Minnesota. This proposal is common sense and right-sized. By increasing the subtraction potentially for seniors filing jointly, married, filing single, and other filers. Some filers will see no tax on Social Security, as we heard, and that you can get extra income as well. The proposal is fiscally responsible, costing around, and I'm rounding up here, $219 million in fiscal year 24-27 and $250 million in fiscal year 26-27. This is in stark contrast to eliminating the entire tax, which would cost the state over and this is old numbers, now maybe they've been updated, $1.2 billion in fiscal year 24-25 and $1.55 billion in 26-27. While we all wish that budget surpluses would continue forever, they will not. For those of you who might doubt that, in my 14 years working at the legislature and my 24 years at the Minnesota AFL-CIO, I can tell you from personal knowledge that budget deficits are as common as budget surpluses. Thank heavens we have a strong rainy day fund for deficits. So again, the Social Security benefit deduction in the governor's tax bill, House File 1938, provides real relief to seniors and is also fiscally responsible. The Minnesota AFL supports House File 1938, in particular cutting Social Security taxes for seniors. Thank you for allowing me to testify this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Leto. Next up is Mr. Cryon. On deck is Ms. Webster. Mr. Cryon, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Philip Cryon. I have the privilege of serving as an elected leader of SEIU Healthcare Minnesota and Iowa. We're a union of 50,000 healthcare workers in hospitals, clinics, nursing homes, and home care. I am here today to urge you to support Governor Walz's budget, his revenue proposals, and in particular his balanced proposal for addressing the issue of Social Security tax exemption. My union is very proud of the tentative agreement for a new union contract that our home care members were able to reach a few weeks ago. It was actually just submitted to the Subcommittee on Employee Relations yesterday for the consideration of the full legislature to ratify, and we hope fund it this session. After generations of being overlooked and disrespected as healthcare workers, this new home care union contract would, for the first time, deliver a living wage of $20 an hour for home care and establish a wage scale honoring, for the first time, long-time caregivers' professional experience. This is the sort of recognition and respect that many of us might take for granted in other workforces, but that has never been possible for consumer-directed home care workers. Our members and the people with disabilities and seniors who rely on them every day to remain in their communities consistently use one word when they are trying to describe their feelings about this new contract. They say it will be life-changing. Simply put, the state's ability to fund this kind of lasting improvement in frontline caregivers' lives and the lives of the people they serve depends on having the tax revenue to support it. A tax cut where the overwhelming majority of the dollars go back into the pockets of high-income Minnesotans, such as a full Social Security exemption, would make this kind of policy progress less possible both now and into the future. On the other hand, low- and middle-income Minnesotans, like many of the healthcare workers in my union, absolutely are feeling the pressure right now of rising costs, wages that don't keep pace with inflation, shrinking retirement benefits, and unaffordable housing. Exempting low- and middle-income Minnesotans from the Social Security tax would help everyone feeling that squeeze, and that is exactly the approach the governor has proposed. I hope you will support it.
Thank you, Mr. Cryon. Next up is Jessica Webster. On deck is Deborah Fitzpatrick. Ms. Webster, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid. I use she, her pronouns. Legal Aid is represents Minnesota children and families statewide who have low incomes and low wealth. We want to thank the governor for a few provisions in House File 1938. I will try to match Commissioner Marquardt's enthusiasm by saying that, you know, we are enthusiastically supporting the creation of a Minnesota child tax credit because of its demonstrable impact on child poverty. In Legal Aid's offices statewide, the impact of the federal child tax credit was described by families as extraordinary relief. It was an ability to afford rent and food, children's clothes, diapers. It was an opportunity to catch up some past debts And for a few, very small number of families, it meant a small emergency savings account, maybe for the very first time. So we see a Minnesota Child Tax Credit as an opportunity to do something transformational for Minnesota children experiencing poverty and material hardship. We really look forward to more conversation about it and the possibility of that credit in our state. And we also, second, I just want to say we strongly support the provision to accept ITINs for families to receive the Working Family Credit. It's an important provision targeted at basic fairness. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Webster. Next up is Deborah Fitzpatrick. On deck is Nathan Jessen. Ms. Fitzpatrick, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization for the record. Proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Deborah Fitzpatrick. I'm the Director of Policy and Research at Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. Thank you, Chair Gomez, committee members, for this opportunity to share our strong, enthusiastic support for the child tax credit portion of House File 1938, and thank the Governor, Lieutenant Governor, and Commissioner Marquardt for centering the elimination of child poverty in their tax proposal. You might ask what difference $1,000 could make for Minnesota children living in our lowest income families. According to a robust body of research, it can actually mean quite a lot. A small amount of flexible income support can make a surprisingly large difference for children living with the chronic stress and instability that results from having parents in the low-wage sectors of our economy. The National Academy of Science finds that even modest boosts in parental income, especially during a child's first years, have striking associations with that child's future school and employment success. In 2021, 138,000 Minnesota children were living in poverty, a number that has undoubtedly grown as the full impacts of the federal CTC rollback are borne out in our families and communities. That's enough to fill the Twin Stadium more than three times over. That's how many Minnesota kids, disproportionately from our Black, Indigenous, and Latinx communities, that have the deck unnecessarily stacked against them. In over 40 listening sessions in all corners of the state, we heard about the dignity of and importance of policies like a state CTC that increase access to flexible income support alongside public programs that reduce expenses like housing, food, or childcare. As you have heard, a proposal similar to the one included in House File 1938 could cut child poverty in Minnesota by 25%. We hope you will join the governor in his pledge to end child poverty in Minnesota and make a significant dent in achieving that goal by passing a child tax credit this year.
Thank you, Ms. Fitzpatrick. Next up is Nathan Jessen. On deck is Nan Madden. Mr. Jessen, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nathan Jessen. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. I'm also testifying on behalf of my colleague Patricia Nauman from Metro Cities, who wasn't able to be here today. We appreciate the recognition in the governor's budget that local government aid is currently underfunded. The state's not investing in the state-local partnership at the same level as it did for decades. This results in higher property taxes and reduced services at the local level. Local government aid represented over 4% of the state general fund budget in 2002, and today it's just at 2%. We are working with other city and county groups and recommend a larger increase of $150 million for each of those programs, included in House File 1377, which is included and which is authored by Chair Lislegard and has been heard in the Property Tax Division. We're also thankful for the updates to the LGA formula included in the governor's recommendations. The formula has remained the same since 2013. And over the last year and a half, city groups, including the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, Minnesota Association of Small Cities, and our organization, have worked together to come to an agreement on those proposed changes to provide more stability for local governments. And lastly, we're also supportive of streamlining the sales tax exemption for construction materials and supplies purchased by contractors for government and nonprofit organizations. The governor's proposal is retroactive to 2021, July 1st of 2021, which is the last time an omnibus tax bill became law. But we support making this change permanent, whereas we support making the change permanent, as this committee heard in a bill authored by Representative Norris, House File 1603. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Jessen. Next up is Nan Madden. Matt Mossman is on deck. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Madden. Please state your name and organization for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. We strongly support the creation of a child tax credit, which builds on the remarkable documented success of the federal expanded child tax credit in reducing poverty, hardship, and racial and geographic disparities. You have a handout that lists a broad range of Minnesota organizations that have come together in support of an inclusive Minnesota child tax credit to reduce child poverty by an estimated 25%. Governor Walz's proposal matches many of our design principles to have a powerful anti-poverty impact, including features to ensure that the most struggling families get the full value of the credit. A child tax credit would be a truly transformational policy for Minnesota children and families, and I urge you to make it a strong priority this year. We also strongly support the provisions that remove arbitrary barriers that keep otherwise eligible Minnesotans with ITINs from qualifying for the working family credit, homestead status, and homeowner property tax refunds. And we also support the long overdue updates to the K-12 education credit. We also want to thank Governor Walz for proposing investments in childcare, healthcare, and other public services that respond to the real challenges that Minnesotans are facing and address long-standing disparities and disinvestment. Those investments are made possible because of parts of the tax plan that protect needed revenues. Governor Walz would continue Minnesota's income-targeted approach to Social Security exemption, under which the lowest-income seniors do not pay any income taxes on their Social Security and everyone has some exemption. We believe if any changes are made to that exemption this year, they should be as small and targeted as possible so we can continue to fund the public services that Minnesota seniors, their children, grandchildren, and neighbors count on. And finally, we want to lift up that Governor Walz's tax plan recognizes that much of the projected surpluses are temporary, result from federal COVID response and stimulus policies, and he includes revenue-raising proposals so that Minnesota can sustainably fund important public services into the future. Thank you,
Ms. Madden. Next up is Matt Mossman. On deck is Mark Haveman. Mr. Mossman, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Matt Mossman with the Minnesota Inter-County Association. Let me start by saying that counties and cities are united this session in support of a biennial budget that renews the state and local fiscal partnership that has historically been intended to help fund essential local services and moderate property tax levies. Locally delivered programs and services are integral to strong local communities and local economies. So we appreciate and thank Governor Walz for putting forward and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan for putting forward budget recommendations that increase state funding to county programs through both one time and importantly through ongoing county program aid increases. CPA has been the primary tool for providing general flexible funding that helps mitigate upward pressure on property tax levies as costs have risen related to a vast array of essential services performed by counties in public health, public safety, human and social services, elections, and more. Many of you have heard from local officials how CPA is used directly to offset levies. We appreciate also the governor's recommendations to include a state aid increase for CPA and a state aid increase for public safety. We also appreciate the inclusion of the temporary state refund exemptions for sales tax paid by local governments and other public entities on construction projects. We do believe that ongoing flexible state funding is the best way to assist local governments to meet state determined programs and local service needs. We believe that a higher level of CPA increase is needed, and we look forward to working with the administration and the legislature to help make that happen. Finally, in closing, we know that state tax revenues are also essential to funding programs and state mandates across the state budget and other committees as well, and we appreciate the governor's complete budget and that recognizes increased funding for probation services, housing, infrastructure, and other areas. And so thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Mossman. Next up is Mark Haveman. On deck is Kelly Wilson. Mr. Haveman, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Mark Haveman. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Center for Fiscal Excellence. I want to focus my testimony today on the surcharge on capital gains and dividend income. We have serious concerns and reservations about the need, justification, the policy merits of that proposal, but I want to focus my testimony today on why this provision can actually be a detriment to other aspects of the governor's tax agenda. Minnesota is now more dependent on individual income taxation to fund government than at any other time in its history. At the same time, the Department of Revenue estimates about 25% of Minnesota's adults pay no income tax. Perspective on how current income tax reliance is shared among those who do pay can be gained by calculating revenue replacement ratios among filers who do pay income taxes. For example, based on our most recent individual income tax comparison study, if a single $1 million married filing jointly household would leave the state, 32 new families with two dependents at the $75,000 income level would be needed to make up for that lost income tax revenue. Large tax programs included in the governor's bill and in the House and Senate as well will need to be financed. At the same time, the number of income taxpayers, as you've heard already, will be reduced significantly or have their tax liability zeroed out. With the new credits, this revenue replacement ratio would be many multiple times larger because much or all that household, that $75,000 household's income tax liability of about $2,300 would be eliminated. In short, implementing tax credit proposals, the fiscal impact of the departure of any high income earners will be magnified significantly. In short, you need these people here taxed to finance the tax credits, and this provision is most definitely not the way to do it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Hayman. Next up is Kelly Wilson. Imam Zaman is on deck. Mr. Wilson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Chair Gomez, members of the Tax Committee, thank you so much for allowing me to testify today. My name is Kelly Wilson, and I've been a teacher in the Osseo School District for 38 years. I am also a release time president right now and a member of the Education Minnesota Governing Board. I would like to thank Governor Walz for using his teaching experience to lead Minnesota while focusing on what matters, community and the public good. This bill reflects those values. I was concerned to hear so much buzz this year around cutting the tax on Social Security, a cut that would largely only be felt by the richest among us at a time when our schools are in crisis. Our schools need money to address a critical staffing shortage, support our infrastructure, meet students' mental and physical health needs, and to make sure our children are ready to take on the future. In Osseo, we currently have 21 special ed or student-related services teaching openings. 7 of our sites are without a registered nurse or a licensed practical nurse, and we have 72 open ESP positions. Schools need your support. Education needs a dedicated, stable funding stream from the legislature, and every tax cut that you can give millionaires and billionaires hurts the future of our state. Because one-time spending from the budget surplus won't be enough, I'm asking you to reject any new tax cuts that favor the rich and support proposals that will ensure the wealthiest Minnesotans and the largest corporations start paying what they truly owe in taxes so that our schools can have the resources they need. This bill does that. It stands up to the pressure of money and power and only includes the people who need it. I support this tax bill, and I think you should too. And please consider the needs of our students and educators as you make decisions for our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Next up is Imam Zaman. On deck is Beth Kadoon. Iman Zaman, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, representatives, assalamu alaikum, greetings of peace. I am Imam Asad Zaman, Executive Director of the Muslim American Society of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to share my perspective on the governor's bill, House File 1938. First and foremost, our budget is a moral document. Whatever budget we pass for the state will reflect our values. It will make clear who and what we prioritize and what we care about. Our decisions as a state in passing the state budget will impact millions of lives through the investments we choose to make and those we choose not to make in the health and well-being of all Minnesotans. Our people need affordable housing solutions that work for our large family sizes. Our people need funded, fully funded childcare. We need education to be fully funded. Our people need the Minnesota Care buy-in. This bill contains many worthwhile investments in the financial stability of Minnesotans who are struggling to make ends meet. The child tax credit will provide much needed assistance to young families just starting out, and the expansion of the working family credit to include non-citizen taxpayers will provide relief to low-income workers and families that labor to keep our state running. The surplus comes from the vibrant economy we have here in Minnesota. The high incomes of the rich and the large profits of the mega corporations occur in the context of our vibrant economy. Therefore, it is only right that we spend it on those who have worked just as hard but have received less. I appreciate that Governor Walz's tax bill puts them first. I appreciate how this budget protects Minnesota's ongoing tax revenues, which are needed for investments in childcare, affordable housing, education, and much more. In particular, I support Governor Walz's tempered approach to tax relief for Social Security recipients. Governor Walz's proposal costs much less and is better targeted at the people who need it most, instead of the proposal for full exemption as proposed in the Senate, which would shower funds upon the wealthiest in Minnesota and would take significant resources away from our ability to invest in a brighter future for everyone. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Imam. Next up is Beth Kadoon. On deck is Aurora Vautrin. Ms. Kadoon, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Kadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We're testifying in opposition to the governor's capital gains tax increase, resulting in Minnesota having the highest tax rate in the nation at 13.85%. This is a 40% increase in the rate at a time when Minnesota has a record $17.5 billion surplus. This is a short-sighted policy and a punitive tax hitting small business owners and farmers who have worked and sacrificed to build their businesses. A typical gain on a small business, according to one CPA that practices in Greater Minnesota, is $500,000 to $2 million. And for many, they don't have a separate retirement account as they plow their profits back into their businesses in order to grow them and provide jobs. This one-time sale was to be their retirement income. This also adds a strong financial disincentive to remain in Minnesota for a highly mobile segment of our population, and is short-sighted, as Mark Haveman mentioned, because Minnesota greatly relies on upper-income households to fund government services. The top 10% of households pay 58% of Minnesota's individual income tax, and the income tax funds over 53% of the state's general fund. These taxpayers already pay the sixth highest income tax in the nation on their capital gains, as in Minnesota, it's treated the same as any other income currently. Plus, we are one of 12 states with an estate tax. The governor and the commissioner mentioned this is a fairness issue, as capital gains receive a lower rate at the federal level. That is a policy debate to have at the federal level. But to try and address this issue in Minnesota will just harm our state's competitiveness, as research has shown that high capital gains taxes negatively affect entrepreneurship, venture capital, and investment decisions. This is a very volatile income source as well. It will add a great deal of instability to our state's budget, as it's 12 times more volatile than salary and wages. There's a handout in your packet from about 100 business associations and local chambers that have more policy reasons why this is a bad tax. I recommend you take a look at that as well. In today's world of global competition and the ability to work from any remotely, tax burdens matter more than ever before. Policymakers should focus on making Minnesota's tax system more competitive, not oppose additional headwinds to Minnesota's future success, and not increase taxes on our small business owners and investment in our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kadoon. Next up is Aurora Vautrin. And then on deck is Ethan Vogel. Ms. Vautrin, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization for the record.
My name is Aurora Vautrin, and I am the legislative and political director for the Minnesota 100% campaign. The Minnesota 100% campaign is a cross-sector, statewide, multiracial, intersectional campaign to build an equitable, clean energy future for everyone in Minnesota. Thank you, Chair Gomez, members of the committee, and staff for the opportunity to testify today in support of the Walz-Flanagan tax proposal. I want to start by saying we know Minnesota's surplus will not last forever, and therefore our tax cuts should not be permanent, large, or structural. I want to uplift the cautious approach this proposal takes to cutting taxes, as well as three provisions that will aid in Minnesota's transition to a more equitable, clean energy future. First, this bill creates a progressive tax code our state needs to prepare for the future we face. The climate and clean energy solutions we need include both one-time transition costs that will require public investments and programs that will need ongoing funding. This proposal ensures that Minnesota will have the revenue needed to make these necessary investments in our future. Second, this bill recognizes the importance of making dedicated investments in public transit in the Twin Cities metro area. Both by authorizing a metro area sales tax and increasing the bonding authority of the Met Council, these investments in transit are both desperately needed and an important tool in reducing our emissions. Lastly, it fixes an unfair exclusion from the state's working family credit and homesteading law. Allowing the use of individual tax identification numbers as proof of identity will allow more Minnesotans to enjoy the tax benefits that most Minnesotans already do. You can find more information about these three provisions in the letter provided, and we ask that you keep them in mind as you assemble the Senate tax bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Vautrin. Next up is Ethan Vogel, and then our last testifier for the day. All right. Next up is going to be Ben Baglio. Ben is on deck, and then we'll see how we're doing on time. So, Mr. Vogel, please proceed with your testimony. You, state your name Chair. And organization for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ethan Vogel, Legislative Director for AFSCME Council 5. Thank you, Chair Gomez and committee members, for the opportunity to testify today. AFSCME Council 5 is a public and private sector labor union. We represent over 43,000 workers in Minnesota. And AFSCME members are in every corner of the state. Their work varies greatly from plowing our roads to caring for our veterans, from criminal prosecution and defense to correctional officers and security counselors and 911 operators and social workers and zookeepers and much, much, much more. I'd like to start by thanking Governor Walz for, and the whole One Minnesota team, really, for putting forward a budget that centers children and families and workers and makes really quite significant and long overdue investments to strengthen public services in Minnesota. So on the Social Security subtraction piece, as one of only 11 states to still tax Social Security benefits, I'm sure we've all been inundated with arguments for and against for repealing the tax in its entirety. Compared to the full repeal, the proposal in this bill is a surgical attempt to address the same concerns. And when considering this or any proposal that reduces revenue, the primary concern for us is the long-term impact on the state's budget and what that impact is going to mean for our members delivering services. I'm really not sure what the magic threshold is for phasing out that tax, but whatever the legislature decides to do on this issue, our position is that that revenue should be replaced with new revenue. And ideally, this would be done in a single bill that would be revenue and tax neutral. And to that point, we appreciate the inclusion of the capital gains tax. Replacing the lost revenue is especially important considering the amount of the surplus that is not structural, and the fact that the state, as an employer, has a lot of ground to make up to be a competitive employer again. We have thousands of open positions, and really the need is not a one-time investment. It's a structural long-term investment. And in closing, Mr. Chair, just want to echo the League of Minnesota Cities, Mr. Jessen, and our hope for the legislature to have a much more significant investment in local government aid and county program aid. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vogel. Next up is Ben Baglio, and then on deck is going to be Matt Hilgert, who will be our final public testifier for today. Mr. Baglio, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ben Baglio, and I'm testifying today on behalf of the Minnesota Nurses Association, which represents over 22,000 professional nurses across the state, making MNA one of the largest and leading voices on issues related to health care and labor in Minnesota. First, we would just like to state our appreciation for the level of caution that legislators are taking when considering the best approach forward to taxation. MNA feels that it would be detrimental to the physical, emotional, mental, and overall well-being of all Minnesotans to impose any significant cuts to our state tax base, especially when we look at the needs of our state, including workforce shortages in our aging services, our chronically underfunded public education system, troubling health care inequities, and the mental health crisis. MNA is supportive of the governor's approach to Social Security tax exemptions because we feel across-the-board exemptions would not only be bad for our state budget, but also for the people of our state who deserve to be supported and invested in. Minnesota nurses support continuing and expanding our state child tax credits, which MNA sees as an important tool to eliminating child poverty, investments in local government aid, which we know is particularly vital to rural communities that have a lower tax base but still have very real community needs to address. And MNA supports efforts to ensure that the wealthiest Minnesotans, including those that benefit from the labor of Minnesota's workers to make their profits, are paying their fair share in taxes in return for the wealth that our state provides them with. MNA supports investing in Minnesotans by ensuring that we have the revenue for fully funding our schools, fixing our state's broken mental health system, ensuring that all Minnesotans can afford childcare, and improving healthcare access, affordability, and outcomes, which includes access to affordable, appropriate, and comprehensive mental health services. We urge the legislature to enact a tax bill that solidifies our state's commitment to fully investing in our communities so that our state and all of its residents are able to reach their full potential. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Baglio. Next up is Mr. Hilgert. Please state your name and organization for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Hilgert. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. I want to thank the governor and lieutenant governor for their commitment to supporting local governments and join the local government chorus in supporting a variety of mechanisms that include the construction material sales tax exemption provision, support for our soil and water conservation districts, and a joint investment in CPA and LGA. I think it is noteworthy that the provisions that I just mentioned have all enjoyed broad bipartisan support over the course of the last decade. And as we've testified before in this committee, property tax relief should be a statewide priority for the legislature this year. We are interested in the commitment to rebuilding that state and local partnership and also working with committee members and the property tax division members on an array of property tax relief proposals that are even outside of just this bill. So thank you very much, members, and I appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Hilgert. All right, and with that, in the interest of time, we're going to wrap up for today. So the chair moves that House File 1893, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion. Members, we're going to continue this tomorrow. We're going to wrap up our public testimony. Then we are going to move on to member discussion. Commissioner Marquardt will be back tomorrow, so there will be plenty of time for further questions and discussion around the substance of the bill tomorrow. Representative Swidzinski, did you have a quick question?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to Representative Gomez, appreciate your work. Just was kind of as a roadmap, obviously we talked about what's going on tomorrow. Just was seeing if the House DFL majority is planning on moving forward with their own tax bill, or are they just going to, is the governor's tax bill your tax bill?
Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Swidzinski. Representative Davids isn't here today, so I'll let you know a little about how this works, because he would be like, absolutely not. The tax chair's bill is their own bill. We do not take the governor's bill. We take it. We're laying the bill over, as we said, with the official motion or the kind of what the action that our committee is going to take. But, you know, as you know, we've heard a bunch of different bills. We've heard some aspects or some bills that are you know, kind of aligned with the governor's bill. We've heard other things that he doesn't include. And so this committee will be working together over the next weeks and what couple months we got left to build our own tax bill. And then, you know, we'll bring it into the bigger conversation with the governor and the Senate as we get closer to the end of session. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. And with that, members, we will be back tomorrow, March 1st at 1 o'clock. The meeting is adjourned.